Wagwan, everybody. Welcome to the Dis-Afemi History Podcast, where we'll be speaking about history and as well family history and how history relates in terms of Caribbean people for the present as well as in the past, and how in the past, what that does and brings forth for what we are going through at present and what we can learn from our history, from our family, and take that moving forward. So I do hope you enjoy the podcast. And if you like it, please ensure to subscribe, like, and review. Thank you.
In today's episode, Wendy Aris has the honor of speaking with Chief Kalan Nebonrix Kaiman of the Jamaican Hummingbird Taino people. Join us for an inspiring discussion about the Jamaican Taino community, their remarkable resilience, and unwavering perseverance. Let's dive into this enriching conversation. So let's have a listen.
So thank you so much, Kalan, for coming on to the podcast, Dis-Afemi History, and to speak about the Tainos in Jamaica, and that they have not been a group of people that were destroyed or no longer exist. So before we start, can I just have you introduce yourself and then we'll start.
Usakasi ditu. Usakasi dayukuno. Nibonrish kaimandiri akia kalan. Kasike yukaiki yame wani daka. Konye wakia yaka wamun woperitono waelino. Greetings. Good day, my relatives and my sister. My Taino name is Nibonrish Kaiman. You can call me Kalan, chief of the Jamaican Hummingbird Taino people. And today we are here to honor those who came before us and those who will come after us, the future generations. Kahom, thank you for this opportunity to share our story.
No, absolutely. Thank you, Kalan. And can you just be able to, we'll start. So can you just be able to walk us through your ancestry to the Taino indigenous people on Jamaica?
Yes. So for me personally, and I'll share this from a first-person perspective so that others that have similar experiences can understand that there are ways and means of coming to a similar conclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, first of all, within my family, as a child growing up, we were very community-based. My grandfather worked in construction, and, we would live in these houses that he would build, and then he would build another one and we'd move to somewhere else,
Mm-hmm.
We're hopping around, but we're always hopping around in the same areas. And we grew up in, I grew up in St. Andrew, and, that's another contention, because people say that I come from Kingston, and I'll say St. Andrew because, my experiences growing up is running cows, neighbor's cows out of the yard, and going into open fields and picking fruits. It was a very different experience, and it was one that I assumed was the norm for everyone. Mm-hmm. And, as you meet more in your age range, going to school, you may have friends that may come over, you may visit them in their home situation. That is the first glance that some things are different. It's the first realization that there are differences in culture, there are differences in households and how they're operated. And when that came to the forefront for me as an individual, I started to ask questions. Now, in my family, when those questions came up, whatever was not known to be European was assumed to be African.
Yeah.
Right? That's just what happened. And there was an older generation in the family that they didn't speak so freely of things that were not European.
Mm-hmm.
There were sayings like, during the summertime, go inside, you'll lose your color,
Yeah.
Statements.
Yeah.
So there were a lot of wounds coming up, internal wounds as it related to identity and how we're perceived and how we viewed ourselves. And that changed when I was in my late teens, early 20s, and I met someone who was white passing individual with Jamaican ancestry that came here to learn more about his father's line, but he came with teachings from Peru.
Mm-hmm.
And he took me on as an apprentice and was teaching me these teachings from Peru, you know, of these Andean people. Now, my entire life growing up, as I said, you know, I when it came to cowboys and Indians, I had an affinity for Native America. You know, parents would buy me bow and arrows and headdress and, you know, it was something that the narrative was different for me. I always wondered why would they attack these people, or they want to take their lands. You know, at an early age, I was aware of what was happening and this programming and making this seem fine. I was aware that, you know, what Indiana Jones was doing was wrong, which not many would have seen it this way. And after I learned these things from him, I felt a little grounded. I honored the Taino people of Jamaica. At that point, I didn't know there was any connection for myself or my family. And learning traditions from South America, there were similarities. You know, they're talking about woodpeckers. They were talking about the hummingbird. They were talking about the crocodile, which are things that are here.
Yeah.
That going through the regular school system, we're not taught to value these things. We're not taught to value our coney and the few that exist. You know, not many were lamenting what happened to our iguanas. This was just not normal outside of my household family discussions. And the next phase in my life was when I was introduced, because I was now trained in this, you know, healing modality, I was invited to an Akan shrine house, Sankofa House of Journeys. And while there, they shared me about the Peace and Dignity Journeys, which is an intertribal prayer run. And that is really what shifted things for me. Every 4 years since 1992, there's an intertribal prayer run that takes place where Native Americans from Alaska all the way down to Argentina connect, and they share in ceremony, and a community runs from the north to a central space designated and from the south to the central space, and they're hosted by different communities. So this is kind of that reconnection that is taking place, and I was invited to represent the Jamaican Taino, so I had to do, you know, research. So now this is reading up what colonizers wrote, and I have to thank Boyanani, Dr. Leslie Gale Atkinson Swaby, Jamaican, homegrown, identifies as Taino and Maroon, who has a book, The Earliest Inhabitants, and it spoke about, you know, Taino spaces in St. Andrew that I had recollection of. You know, I remember going to school and my classmates saying to me that, you know, that they found a skull in the yard and how them parents destroyed because they thought it was Obia. And then to read in Leslie Gale's book that they were actually on a Taino site and being able to map the two experiences together.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, wow, this has been hovering around me for quite some time. So when I was learning certain practices now connected to Taino tradition and how I'd have to carry myself representing Jamaica, I was doing this training around my grandmother, and she said to me that, you know, you're doing things that my father used to do. And I said, what? And she said, yes, you know, him used to say him as Maroon Injin or Maroon Cooley. And I was shocked because I've never heard that spoken of in the family before. And when I asked her, why am I only hearing of this now? That is when she shared that the maternal side of the family, they grew up to believe that Maroon or Injin, they weren't good people.
Mm-hmm.
And for that reason, that wasn't something to speak of. And whatever programming she received, she told her father, even though she was, you know, laughing when she said it to him, and when she explained the story to me as a child, she told him not to share that with anyone and to never say that again. And he respected that, and we had no clue. We know nothing more about that part of the family, other than his mother spent some time in Cuba before we heard she was born in Cuba, but we get to learn that, you know, she was born here and went to Cuba and worked there with the church. And, you know, that shifted things for me internally, because now this became a personal journey, not just, you know, me honoring the people that were here, but now what can I learn about myself? What can I learn about my family? And while on the journey, I met with the Caribbean contingent, you know, people from Puerto Rico, Borinquen, people from Dominican Republic, Kiskean, Haiti, people from Cuba. And now, you know, I'm sharing with people that are Cuba Taino descendants that, you know, I have ancestry from Cuba too. And they're saying, yeah, you know, or people went from Jamaica to Cuba, you know, that happened. And hearing the stories of how, you know, there were cave systems when the British came, and, you know, how the story between Cuba and Jamaica is different from the other islands, that there were places where, you know, there were Spanish men that intermarried with Taino women. And when the British came, they tried to hide these families and hide these communities in fishing villages. And, you know, it was such an emotional shift for me that here I am traveling throughout the Americas, thinking I'm doing something, you know, to help others, when it was really a lot of help for myself and my family. And to summarize what happened next is, when I returned home with this information and I started to share with them, you know, like going through the family tree and where this person came from, and started to record the stories from my grandmother. The funny thing that happened is, sharing it with my paternal side, my father's mother, my grandmother, my paternal side started to share stories too. So I was like, wait. And she's now sharing that, yes, you know, her grandmother's name was Yaya, and how she looked and how long her hair was. And, you know, she said, yes, you know, she was Indian. I said, East Indian. And she said, no, we don't have any East Indian in my family. They're from Jamaica. And it created a shift in our family, because now these were things that my parents didn't know about. And everybody was welcoming and accepting. And it started to make sense of some of the things that we do. You know, our family is a family of dreamers on my mother's side. So my mother, my grandmother, and my aunt and grand aunt, like the women on a whole in the family, whenever there's someone has a dream,
mm-hmm.
everyone would gather and talk about the dream and discuss and interpret it and come to conclusions and who the dream is for and what the dream means. You know, I thought this was normal in every household, and it connected when I was there with our other Caribbean contingent families. So where I am today for my family is that we know that we have Maroon ancestry. We know that we have Taino ancestry. We know that we have some Taino and Native American retention in some of our cultural practices and how we deal with dreams, how we deal with the ancestors. And from that, we have been able to connect with others on the island that share similar stories. You know, there's a terminology that one of our council members has shared in a paper, blood memory. It is an interesting thing when we get together and we're talking about dreams, and everybody's like, oh, I've had that experience too. Yes, this dream or this experience where you're on the coast and you see these ships coming in, and, you know, and I'm like, wow. So, there are these powerful experiences that have connected us and this journey of understanding who we are and bringing that pride to our ancestry. Since then, we have a council that has come together, and we have, you know, restarted our Taino community, bringing everyone back together and sharing stories, sharing about the language resurgence. And what has happened is that we have community members that they found out they're related, you know, that they don't know each other, but through looking into this Taino ancestry, you know, there are certain surnames that come up, certain places that come up, St. Mary, St. Anne, St. Elizabeth, and the connections are being made. And, you know, I'm happy that these shifts are happening, not only in my family, but extending to others as well.
No, absolutely. And it seems to me like that, you know, based on what you just said, is that there's been, I guess, certain themes that have followed you your whole life until it all came together. And then with your light now being further framed, it allowed others to be able to tell their story as well, which has been, you know, that's kind of, it's kind of humbling as well to be able to be a part of that. And so What are some of the, I guess, the key cultural practices and traditions and beliefs that have been preserved within the Jamaican Taino community?
Okay, well, all right. So the Taino community, I like to look on it in two subgroups.
Okay.
So there are the fishing villages that are on the coast,
mm-hmm.
and there are those that are in the interior in the mountain spaces. So there are some that identify as Maroon in the sense of they're not treaty communities.
Yes.
And there are the treaty communities of Maroons as well, that okay. they have individuals that kind of live distant from the rest of the community.
Mm-hmm.
And they know them to be, you know, the indigenous Indian Taino people. And amongst the communities on the fishing coast, the majority of the practices are related to fishing. It is related to canoe making. We have an elder that, you know, he has his father's ads, and he holds a tradition of woodwork and making these dugout canoes. We have what the archaeologists call the Antillean Z fish trap. We in Jamaica just know them as fish pot. That is coming from that Taino tradition. Our people are farmers. So in the mountains overall, there are the farming practices, how we observe the cycles of the moon, how we operate with our calendar, when do we plant, when do we reap. There's even folklore around our practices. So one of our staple foods is yucca, which is cassava. The teaching is that you don't smoke tobacco when you are planting cassava. The cassava will become bitter, you know, and I've learned that from various communities as well. So there are these different things that maintain. There is basket weaving. There is, in some communities, hammock making. There is the food of Bami, you know, that's a Taino practice as well. There is other folklore around trees, like the trumpet tree. You know, we know that the leaves of the trumpet tree indicate the weather conditions that will be coming. This folklore is contained in some of our communities, like Woodside and a lot throughout the island. And some has become widespread, like the concept of the doctor bird, the doctor bird being a cunning bird, you know, doctor bud a cunning bud, hard bud for dead. You know, that song and that concept of it being the god bird is from Taino tradition. You know, there are stories behind why it's considered the god bird, the resilience that this bird has, and its intelligence is connected to our people. There are still elders that they are growing tobacco for medicinal purposes, and they're growing it the traditional way, and they're drying it with other medicinal herbs. So it's a surprising thing when you open that door, and at first, for most, because we're disconnected, you feel like, you know, you're the only one in the space, like you're the last.
Yes.
And then you realize that there's so much preserved and there's so much going on. I mean, we have our sacred sites and all of our sacred sites and most of our sacred sites and sacred caves have a caretaker. Like naturally, there are families in these communities that they understand that their job is to take care of these spaces, take care of these petroglyphs, take care of these sites, take care of these rivers, and they give offerings there. So there's a continuation of these practices now that we're coming together. It's not that we're trying to recreate or we're trying to, you know, read records from the 1300s or the 1400s and pretend like we're coming out of a time machine. Like, these things are here. And that's why I tell our community members that they have to honor their grandparents. They have to honor their parents, because the narrative of our existence and continuity is what they have preserved and brought forward. It is not in the history books,
mm-hmm.
right? How our people survived in Jamaica is one. It was by hiding. So everybody wonders, why is it that we're just popping up now? Because there are systems in place and there's an opportunity for us to have our rights. There's an elder that we have in Green Island that, you know, his family is caretakers of a cave that actually has a cacique's bones. It has calcified into the cave, so it cannot be removed. And he has this fear of sharing about that space because we don't have our rights, that the government or others are going to want to come and take over the space and take away the space. Already, archaeologists have come from universities overseas. They've gone through, they've found pottery and different things. They said they're going to write upon it. They don't include where they found the things, any of that. they leave, they go back to the States, and he has no connection with them. He can't hear from them, you know, young students doing their thesis. So we've had these experiences. We carry that trauma of attempted genocide on our people. So, of course, we're not going to want to just come out and tell everybody, here we are. You know, when we hear the response from the public, oh, is he only representing 10 people? The thought that pops up in one of my council members' heads when they heard that is, are they going to try to wipe out who they think is these 10 people now to put this to rest? So we are very protective of our community. We're very protective of our families. We're very protective of our practices. What we do now is we do have celebrations that the public can participate in, where we share more of our concepts, our cosmology, how we connect with the environment, the valuing that is for the younger generations, because, you know, with all that is taking place with climate change, a return to ancestral ways of balance that existed here for centuries is important. And we know that that onus is on us to speak up. When we see our generation, we have seen too many things happening, you know, that the summers are getting hotter and the dry seasons are getting longer. It would have been very difficult for us to not step up and speak and share what we know and to protect these spaces with the international laws that exist. So we're trying to preserve our sustainable farming practices, our fishing practices, our connection with the environment and these sacred animals. There was a narrative that iguanas were extinct, so we use them as one of our mascots too. And there has been a rehabilitation program with Hope Zoo Foundation, and, you know, the iguanas are coming back in Jamaica. And we say, you know, like the iguanas, they said we were extinct too,
mm-hmm.
right? And the iguanas hold this special function because the seeds that an iguana consumes, when it passes through the iguana's body, those grow faster and are more fertilized than the regular seeds. Even when using, you know, these external fertilizers, it helps to repopulate our forest. So we all have a role to play, and that is an important part of, you know, the practices that we preserve and looking to share with the rest of Jamaica.
No, thank you for that, because it is something to protect. And, you know, just as you had indicated in terms of, you know, students coming over and doing their thesis and, you know, doing their archaeological digs and just taking things that are actually tangible that are part of your heritage and then never to be able to see them again. So, you know, absolutely to be able to, I guess, to protect and to be very cautious, you know, of your group. So would you be able to discuss, I guess, some of the challenges, and I guess maybe that may be some of it, or obstacles that the Jamaican Tayano people have faced in preserving and promoting their cultural heritage?
Well, the most obvious one is that we don't have indigenous rights in Jamaica.
Okay.
And appreciate this opportunity to speak towards that and clarify. The assumption based on things happening in the world today is that when an indigenous group speaks about indigenous rights, that they're only talking about land. It is more than land.
Mm-hmm.
The land is a central space that people are rooted and connected in. And through the land, that's a space now where they can preserve their practices for future generations. You know, communal land and living together and all of that is very important. But additionally, you know, our indigenous rights deals with our cultural practices, deals with our spiritual practices.
Mm-hmm.
We see feathers as sacred, feathers of certain birds that in our cosmology, they soar the closest to Creator. So it represents for us a connection to Creator and our prayers being carried and lifted. There are systems that the average Jamaican has to go through to grow tobacco. And most of the traditional Taino individuals that I know that grow that are not operating through those systems, because it's just something that their father taught them and they pass it down for generations. You just know that these things going to be dried in a shed.
Mm-hmm.
When you need medicine or cleansing or you need to offer prayers, that's something that you do. We have a ridiculous Oviala on the books that mentions feathers and herbs and plants. that though not enforced, it still exists. And there is concern and worry about us when we're gathering, when we're blowing our conch shells, when we're honoring the sun, we're honoring the day, we're honoring the moon, we're giving thanks to a good harvest. All of these things are impacted upon based on the programming and the systems that exist today. So all of that troubles our rights. The fact that in our communities, there is normally an elder woman who deals with home births. The laws state that mother cannot have a home birth for her first or her 10th child. And the system that exists today is really, let me rephrase that. Let me not say the system. The education for young doctors is around ensuring that when it comes to the birth of children, for the mother and for them, they have less issues, and the system that they have designated as one for less issues is a C-section, a surgery. I've heard the saying being said amongst these practitioners that, you know, it's a simple cut and they can be home in time for dinner. Right? That infringes upon the rights of our people and our cultural practices. You know, that honoring of the placenta, that honoring of the navel string, like, there are generations who they don't know what that is like and they will not have that. So it's not just about the land. It is about our identity. We don't have the rights of indigenous people. They say that we are viewed as indigenous culture and not people. So that means we don't have the basic human rights to our practices, to our religious beliefs, to our ceremonies, to have our elder officiate our union ceremonies, you know, marriage between our people, our rites of passage, to have our young ones pulled out of school for their rites of passage. Like, these things may not seem important, but it is integral in understanding our connection to the land and the spaces and who we are. And all of these are impacted by the fact that we do not have our rights.
No, definitely. That anything dealing pertaining to the law to ensure that you have your rights is absolutely important. So going on to that, so what are some of the ongoing efforts or initiatives aimed at reclaiming and revitalizing the Tayero traditions and knowledge among the Jamaican Tayero community?
Well, the first is that, you know, I'm so happy that ancestors blessed us with a council of elders and we have connection with the international Taino community, and through these avenues and these channels, we are able to consolidate and archive a lot of the knowledge and information that we have. There are things that should be obvious, but they aren't, and it's just because this knowledge wasn't being disseminated. You know, our ancestors and elders, and when I say ancestors and elders, just for those listening, I'm not talking about the 1400s, I'm talking about grandparents and great-grandparents. They had to hold on to some of this knowledge and hide it. I mean, we have records of some of our elders that would step up and claim, in those days the terminology used was Arawak, and they were ridiculed. You know, they lost opportunities for business or to own real estate or spaces based on this sharing that they have done and their complexion. So in the times that we're living now, you know, we have an opportunity to step forward. We have an opportunity. I give thanks that we have council members like Tekina Eri-Inaru, that is a professor at University of Ontario, and she has scholarship for young Taino and Black students that want to continue their studies in education. We give thanks for Tekina Katiatoa, Diane Frank Golding, that she's currently the head of the Archaeological Society of Jamaica and one of our main genealogists. We give thanks for Bohita Sibainaru, you know, one of our elders, that she specializes in stones and crystals, and she's able to share. Most people, when they talk about healing and the nature and the environment. They talk about plants, but our traditions use stones as well, and she carries that tradition and she speaks towards that tradition. So through these individuals recognized in their own right and these work that they were doing, all of us coming together, we have an avenue to share with the next generation and to share with the public. We have sent a report to Committee on Elimination of Racial Discrimination in 2022. And the recommendations of the United Nations Committee is that the government sit down and have discussions with us and the Maroons, and also that, you know, the members of society that are self-identifying as Taino, that the government seeks to deal with us and acknowledge that, you know. It's not something for them to try for us now, after all of this time of being ignored and rejected, to prove who we are. What we're asking is to preserve what we have and who we are and our spaces. That is the ask. So there's that. There is, last year, went to the Inter-American Commission on Human Rights. And there as well, we made our requests and our petition known for indigenous rights of Taino and Maroon in Jamaica. We are working at a level with the Ministry of Culture, or pushing for support on our activities so that we can share more with our community members and those interested. We've connected with the History Association, and there are some schools that we may go and share with as well. And then, of course, others like yourself that give us a platform to get our message out. Most recently, I was sharing at University of Rhode Island in Boston and Northeast University through a collaboration with both of them, Catherine John of URI and Chris Manjapra of Northeast. And there was also a Manship artist residency where we worked on solutions to preserve and promote the culture of one of our communities, Woodside community. There's a lot of things that we're doing, and we really appreciate that support. We have our big celebration coming up, our New Year celebration, May 26th. So we'll share, you know, the fundraiser and the stuff for that. This one is on a Sunday, so can get more support, more people can come out, and that's up Woodside, one of our sacred sites that has 3 national heritage sites there. Mm-hmm. So it's really about that awareness and getting it out there, archiving information. We, another success for us most recently, March this year, we were included in the launch of an Indigenous Studies cluster. The University of the West Indies was asked to, you know, be a part of that. And minorityrights.org, we were able to update the profile that they have on Jamaica to include the Ame Taino as Indigenous people and to speak about Tazanit or background, a profile, and or current issues, you know, where we're living people in the present, not just the issues that our ancestors face. So a lot of the narrative is being changed to the present. And I also co-authored a paper with Peter Siegel and Dr. Professor Zachary Baer on another one of our Taino sites, White Marl, and that one is an archaeological paper. So if you Google White Marl and Kasike Kalan or Peter Siegel, that one will come up. And it is talking about White Marl Taino site and its relevance throughout the centuries for different groups, and how we're honoring and the work that we have to do, and the issues that we have with even preserving that site as well. Because if we're not people and we don't have the rights of Indigenous people, then we can't claim our ancestors when people find them. We can't say that we want them to be buried in an honorable way. You know, there are so many implications that comes from that. And these are things that we want to correct, to shift. But we want our voice to be included and when there are discussions or decisions around lands that everyone knows them to be Taino lands. It's on records.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because we have not been formally using these spaces, because we don't have those rights, they don't seek or free or prior informed consent before any activities. So we may just turn up one day and the site is gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So we're becoming more vocal, and galvanizing international support. Our community sits on the Council of Indigenous Caribbean Organization of Indigenous Peoples. We've created the Yame Council of Indigenous Leaders with ourselves and the Windward Maroons here in Jamaica doing advocacy. And myself individually, I'm a part of the Council of Indigenous Traditional Healers of the Americas. And, you know, they are each organization, each group helps us with a different level of advocacy. So when we talked about health and medicine and birth practices that would fall under the Council of Indigenous Traditional Healers of the Americas, you know, they would amplify that message. There is a quarterly magazine that they put out. Right now it's in Spanish, so I have to translate everything that I write to Spanish, but it's an opportunity to get out to Latin America, some of our Tainoes here in Jamaica, how we view moon cycles, etc. Mm-hmm. And happy for the waves that we've been able to make and maintain.
Absolutely. I mean, you're not only connecting to the local Jamaican community, but as well to the broader community within the region itself. So to amplify what you are about to do in terms of having your indigenous rights acknowledged and put into law in Jamaica. So again, would you be able to, I guess, you know, share any other personal or community experiences that highlight, again, the resilience and the vitality of the Taino culture among the Jamaican Taino today?
Oh, repeat that question.
Like, would you be able to share any personal or community experiences that highlight the resilience and vitality of Taino culture among Jamaican Taino today?
Oh, yes. All right. So one of the things, obviously, that, you know, I was sharing before that I'm very proud of is that when we did some research and we were looking online for Jamaica and Taino, or looking up on Jamaica, we found minorityrights.org website, and the narrative, which is the same for so many places, had our people in the past.
Yes.
You know, this narrative of extinction.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was ancestors' guidance, because I told our council member that we need to write to them and let them know that we are here. We need to mention the work that we have been doing, and we need to push to have this changed. You know, it is time now that we write our story, because what they have on their website was referenced by the Organization of American States and most university students when they're searching. You know, that's one of the websites that would come up. And though it took almost a year, you know, March this year, we were successful in having that change. So now when people ask, oh, we want some info on you, we want a profile, we can send them to minorityrights.org. And there it details the profile, it details the background from our perspective. The background which says that our island was the first island that Columbus and his people released the bull mastiffs. That was the moment that people ran into the mountains from the shores. Or narrative which speaks towards that intermarriage with the Spanish as well. And these coastal villages and those who to protect themselves and to hide, they claim to be of Spanish descent instead of Taino, because there was an exotic slave trade, which we have community members who would share with you that their great-grandmother says this is something that is not that long ago, is in England, because, you know, there were offers made for better life or this or that or whatever it may be by a suitor, and ended up over there and had to start over from scratch. The promises were not kept. These things have been happening for quite some time. So we are happy that we were able to have that opportunity to share our message and to share our story and to get that out there. The next thing that we're happy about that our community has been doing here locally is that this year would make, for May 26, the fifth year that we've had our Taino New Year celebration. And it has been getting stronger and stronger support from grassroots, those giving to the fundraiser. We got support from the Ministry of Culture last year and from private entities. We've been able to have activities at our White Mile site as well. Two celebrations each year supported by Water Resource Authority and Hope Zoo. We have been able to solidify for our community through my duality and our chieftainess. She was successful with a group that got a project done with the University of Edinburgh and got a grant. And what it was about is climate justice or climate mitigation through ancestral gardens. So a book is going to be created and website on one of our sites. And the whole emphasis on it is how through these ancestral farming practices and growing these ancestral foods, the Taino foods of the island, how we can contribute to correcting climate change in these small ways. And as a result of that work that she has done, she was nominated to join a global research, co-researcher expo or conference in Edinburgh, Scotland. So, you know, we should be going there end of May. And that's another opportunity to network and to connect with others and to get that awareness out. And I guess based on your platform, the creme de la creme is that we have been working on something with Harvard for quite some time, and that should come out later this year. So there, Harvard's lab has genome-wide testing that has been used to extrapolate additional information or detailed information on the ancestors or first peoples of Spanish-speaking Caribbean. And I can successfully say that they had 22 successful samples from Jamaica, and the data, the information is already being extracted. So by the end of this year, or before the end of this year, there will be a paper on the Taino people, ancient Taino people of Jamaica, and that genome, that DNA sequence will be available for others to map to, so they can definitively say that they are Taino descendant of Jamaica.
Absolutely. That's great. That is, you know, probably validation as well, because as you said, a lot of the Taino people had to hide, had to cover that, you know, deny their culture in order to survive to this day, right? So, and I guess I know that you've mentioned a couple of things in regards to the Taino perspective, but would there be any other ways in which the Taino perspective and voices contribute to the discussion about Indigenous rights, environmental stewardship, and cultural diversity in Jamaica?
Yes, my dear. So as it relates to Indigenous rights, you know, if you've noticed, when I share about any advocacy work that we're doing, I always include the Maroons. The Maroons are our relatives. And when I say relatives, I don't mean like distant cousin. I mean like brothers and sisters, blood relatives. If you want to look at it one way, you can say that our people in the mountains are the Maroons, and our people on the coast, you know, you just refer to as the Amitai.
Mm-hmm.
And due to that fact, whatever it is that we're doing, we ensure that the door is open and they have access and they have their own keys. It's not something that they'll have to require us, or they have to be subservient to us, or any of that. They have these rights as well. So we're working on that, and we're pushing for that together. You know, there are atrocities that take place in their communities, and a lot of it is from misinformation and lack of understanding. And there really needs to be a cultural sensitivity course as a part of our Indigenous rights and this moving forward. You know, how they deal with ancestral remains, allowing us, when they find them, to be present and to honor the spirit of those ancestors so they can pass over.
Mm-hmm.
These things are important to us and our people. It's like some of these remains, our ancestors are condemned because they don't have that opportunity. Just as someone of a Catholic faith would have their last rites, we have our rights too. There is a story I heard from one of our Maroon relatives in a community where police came and someone was in mile, and the police was trying to address that individual who, you know, if you understand about our spiritual practices, he wasn't present. And, you know, it was escalating to the police officer almost becoming violent, you know, as if this person is not having any disregard for him. If we had our rights, that wouldn't happen. An elder, a medicine person, they would speak to someone in the community, and that person would do whatever it is that you require. If it's information, if it's somebody that you want for something, whatever, and would be that guide and explain that you cannot do that during these times. You cannot do that because of the impact it will have, right?
Mm-hmm.
There are so many things that are of utmost importance to us and our way of life and our way of being and our identity. And I think it is good if that is understood wide scale. So one of the things that we'd love to do, we heard that it's funding is an issue. So that's why in the recent press release, we made mention of that, that the narratives in the National Museum and these places, you know, need to be updated to speak towards the present. So if it means that they need funding for science, I know that if we reach out to the diaspora, we will get the funding, you know. So if the signs need to be updated and it's a cost, then let us know the cost and we will find the money to pay for that app. Because it shifts things for our young ones growing up, knowing that we are here, but being taught in schools and elsewhere that we're extinct.
Mm-hmm.
I have no problem with the narrative that our communities were decimated, because they were.
Mm-hmm.
But the people survived.
Yeah.
And the culture survived. So those are some aspects of things as it relates to our indigenous rights. As it relates to cultural diversity, yeah, that respect on a whole. I mean, there are several ethnicities here. Jamaica's motto is out of many one people. Because of the circles that I'm in, Jamaica has a good amount of Native Americans that will pass through here from time to time. There are Cherokee here, there are Dene Lakota here, there are Miskito from Nicaragua here who have settled in St. Elizabeth. And the average Jamaican has no idea, has no clue. And, you know, a lot of times these stereotype comments are made and in jest, and they don't understand the impact that these will have, especially to a younger generation who might hear these things and feel like, you know, they don't really want to take up. There's no pride in taking up their place and their culture and their way of being. So that needs to happen. An appreciation and respect. We have that. We understand that. When we go into a space, because of the connection that I shared with our relatives from South America,
yes,
we understand what plurinationality is. And that's lost, even in some places in North America and Central America.
Yeah.
The concept that several nations can exist on one landmass and together and work together. We can, in the morning, I can greet Creator in my way, and you greet Creator in your way, and somebody else greet Creator in their way, and we move through the day together in a good way. You don't have to repeat what I am saying, and I don't have to repeat what you're saying. But that colonized way. So I guess the next thing to summarize it is decolonization, you know, as it relates to education, interaction, relation, hierarchies, that needs to be shifted, and we're doing the work to shift that. I believe that the template of us working together through the YAMI/Jamaica Council of Indigenous Leaders with our Maroon relatives is a good example of what's possible. And what I've heard from our relatives throughout the Caribbean is that nothing like that exists elsewhere to date. So the more opportunities we have to amplify and to share that for plurinational groups, they're rooted in the space and in the land, and their stories in the land. So that's something that we share together as stewards of the land, not to reap or to take from the land, but to give to the land.
No, definitely. And what you said kind of leads into the next question in terms of, you know, what the role do you see with Taino culture revitalization playing in the broader conversations about decolonization and indigenous sovereignty in Jamaica?
All right. So in Jamaica, sovereignty is a hot word.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There are many concepts around sovereignty. And again, I think the reason why it's a hot word is that a lot of times it is focused on land.
Yes.
Sovereignty and autonomy, as I've shared, is more than just land.
Mm-hmm.
Sovereignty means that we have the wherewithal, the rights, and the systems in place to take care of our own people. Take care of them physically, emotionally, and spiritually. That means that if there are issues, we have our own systems for conflict resolution. we can settle disputes on our own. That means that as it relates to poverty or it relates to malnutrition, we have systems that can resolve those issues, that we can make our decision and we can work on our own without requiring any provisions or making applications in external entities to have these things done. That is what we're looking at. That is what we're working at. And that to me, for our community, is our definition of sovereignty. Sovereignty for us is our medicine people respected just as much as the Western doctors.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's an issue, we can go to our medicine people. They can write a certificate. They can recommend certain practices, diets, fasts for our young ones. They can write up a paper for someone and, you know, they have that time off from work to go and deal with whatever spiritual ailment that may be affecting them mentally so that they can move forward. It is a vision of a Jamaica that is even advanced as it relates to North America and South America that has these things, because it is based on our traditional values. A lot of the systems that are in place as it relates to federal recognition in the States were penned by the colonizers, even though with an intention to strike some balance, but it was based on what they saw as valuable. And over time, that is what cultural value became. But for us, the cultural value is the culture itself and the practices itself. You know, how amazing would it be for a young girl having her first moon, have a certificate for her to have that time at home with community and go through a rite of passage to understand something that she's going to live with until she's going through menopause, that empowers her and helps her to understand the part that she's on. Imagine what it is like if our young men had their rite of passage when their voice was changing, instead of them feeling embarrassed and feeling that they need to tap into more testosterone and become more aggressive. They realize that their voice changing means there's a responsibility they're taking on. And it means that they need to be mindful of how they use their voice, the type of content they create in this world of creating content, what messages they're putting out, who are they protecting with their voice. Imagine what Jamaica would be like, because these are not things that would be, you know, relegated to our communities alone, but would be shared with the wider Jamaica. So that the young ones understand and are welcome into these different phases as they grow older. If they were welcomed into manhood and womanhood and welcomed into their sacred unions and welcomed into the role of being an elder. So it was time. They could look forward to it. They could say, whoa, you're not 50 and I'm going to be 52 in 2 years. And I'm going to be an elder and the community going to welcome me and I'm going to put a sash on me and I can give feathers now at celebrations and ceremonies. And if something happening now at a university, I can go and talk and go and collect an honorarium instead of just sitting down in an old folks home or at home with nothing to do. So it shifts the mindset and it's going to take time to get Jamaica to understand, because right now everybody is in this landlocked perspective. And they're thinking that when we talk about rights and we talk about what it is that we desire, that that's all that we're talking about. What we want is for land and the water and the environment to be in a sustainable way for the next 7 generations. And right now, because the next 7 generations is 200 years, right now we have no faith in those who are the current caretakers. So if it means that we are co-caretakers, that is fine. Because in our traditions, there was no concept of owning land. I can't say I'm going to own the land and when the land feel like it going to shake or it going to flood or the trees just going to turn over. I can't control that. What we can do is try to ensure that we are remaining in balance so that what we have lasts for the next generation. There's an old saying that the land that we live on today is something that we have borrowed from the future generation. So it doesn't belong to us. And we need to make sure that they have it to utilize.
No, for sure. And you're just talking about in terms of having some sense of value, some sense of knowing oneself in terms of being able to, as you said, to move the rites of passage for both the female and the male. And of course, later on, part of that life cycle and then becoming an elder in the community. I mean, it's all about knowing oneself and knowing what each of these milestones will represent and be significant to. So, I guess this leads again into the next question about are there any significant historical or archaeological findings related to Jamaica Taíno people that have been found or documented?
Yes, there has been quite a few, as I recommended the book Earliest Inhabitants by Dr. Leslie Gale Atkinson-Swewe. We know her as Boyanani. She shares about several archaeological sites and work that has been done. Some of them, lost to development, these buildings built on top of them, so there's not much that can be done. There's the White Marl site that a lot of rescue archaeology is taking place there, and that is one of the sites that we're trying to protect as much as we can. There's Woodside, where we'll have our celebrations, that has their two national heritage sites that are Taíno sites, the Taíno Steps and the Atabey, our Mother Earth, Spirit of Mother Earth petroglyph, where we do our offerings and give thanks during our New Year celebration, which falls as the start of the rainy season. There's discussions about, well, there has been discussion for some time about having returned to our island two of our most, I would say, our most important Semis that are at the British Museum currently. And I know the government was talking about this new system that exists of having things on loan. I mean, I'd rather we have them. And I know that the government wants to put these at the a new museum they're looking to build at Port Royal. I'm looking to have some discussion with them, because we don't necessarily want our ancestral artifacts to be separated. The two semi that I mentioned is the semi of Boyniel and the semi of Marahu. Marahu has been known as the Birdman, and Boyniel is the rain semi. And these are two significant things because they anchor the two seasons that we have here, the dry season and the rainy season. We believe that once those return home and we can start doing the work that we're supposed to do with honoring those semis, that some semblance of balance, or at least wisdom, would be garnered on how to maintain these semblance of balance that we seek. And I had mentioned to you about the work that is being done with Harvard, where the ancestral remains samples were taken from those that are a part of UWI's archive and Institute of Jamaica. 22 were successful, and information will be coming out, if not by the end of the year, before the end of the year, on the data that has come from that. One of the things that I've requested from them is to identify the closest living relative today of our ancestors. Because one of the things our people hears a lot is, about phenotype, how we look. And reality is that they don't know how Taíno people look, right? My belief is that the closest living relative to our ancestors today may be, well, from what I understand, our Lekona relatives, the Arawak relatives on the mainland, or maybe some relatives in the Amazon, the Brazil region of the Amazon. But I think, still believe it is good for them to understand that, and that for that to be clear in the minds of Jamaicans moving forward. Not to say that, our phenotype is what their phenotype would be, or vice versa, because we're not assuming to be people from the 1300s or the 1200s. Caribbean has always had a culture of intermarriage, intermixing, taking the best of two worlds and putting it together to ensure the survival of the next generation.
Definitely.
As they
And
say in Jamaica, good stock.
yeah, for sure, absolutely. So, and then how can individuals outside of the Taíno community support the efforts to preserve and celebrate Taíno culture and heritage in Jamaica?
Well, one, what I'll do is that, we'll have our website, yamayewani.com, YamayeGuani.com. You can reach out to us with the recent press release, there are some NGOs and other organizations that are looking to support us with our indigenous rights, amplifying our voices, creating platforms for us to share, whether it's Zoom meetings or inviting us to speak at conferences, seminars, etc. Because, you know, in every space that there is individuals from the Jamaican diaspora, chances are that they themselves may have Taíno ancestry. And in our desire to help you, in our desire to find help for ourselves, maybe end up helping you as well. You know, our culture is cyclical and circular and deals with being holistic. So there's this concept of reciprocity: as we give, so do we receive. So that's one aspect of it. And the other is, we have our celebrations, you know, where there's four that is open. Well, let me tell you, we have one March 14th at White Marl. We have May 26th at Woodside. We have June 20th at Charlestown. That's where we honor the solstice in our Taíno way. We have September 21st or 22nd back at White Marl, and then we have December 21st. So we have these activities that take place as open to the public. We're developing other activities at Woodside, so people can go there and they can do a tour of the Taíno site, Daddy Rock, the Taíno steps, with, you know, the aim of helping to develop the community and create sustainable ways for the community and the individuals. And there's expertise that we may require too, you know? So we're reaching out to these NGOs that are out there. Our young ones may want some opportunities to learn how to work with social media. Probably one of our communities could be suited with computer lab, and instructors come and teach them robotics or programming, you know? Like, there's always this assumption that in our communities, the only thing that we want to learn is craft and to build things. You know, there's other levels. We have graphic artists, or budding graphic artists, or videographers. There are certain levels of sustainability required. When we have our celebrations, it would be good if it's somebody from our community that can do it. It would be good if there are scholarships for archaeology. So, you know, the person doing them thesis just go around in backyard and them checking up on all of the artifacts that are there. You know, there are a lot of barriers perceived for our people, and any assistance in breaking those barriers.
Exactly. No, that would be great. Now, I'll include that in some of the show notes as well for some of the links that you mentioned. And what message would you like to share with people who are interested in learning more about the Jamaican Taíno and their contributions to Jamaican history and culture?
In the Annals of History, there is a line in which the attempt to wipe my ancestors from the history books was initiated. That line is during the moments when the British came to the island, and it is said that the Spanish released the enslaved. At that point, for whatever reason, as sad as it may be, the assumption was made and programmed into the people of this island that enslaved in the America only refers to people of African ancestry, which is a hard one to swallow. And from that point, the Taínos were whittled away little by little. There are records of us on plantations belonging to the British, even some prominent schools. We are part of building some of these prominent schools in Jamaica. But whittled away little by little to where our first prime minister claimed he has had Arawak ancestry, Alexander Bustamante. And again, he was ridiculed.
Yes.
What I would say is that we're in a time now in the world where we have to write our narratives on our history. And we have to understand and look on things from the perspective of the people that lived during those times. We have to respect our ancestors, those who came before us, those who taught these practices of preparing the bami, of growing the cassava in a way that, you know, Jamaica has no mass numbers or any. I've never heard of cyanide poisoning from cassava in Jamaica. It happened in Nigeria when the crop went there, but not here because it has been practiced here for centuries prior. It is a staple food that we really should be growing more and have the availability of it more. I believe once we understand the medicines that are here, that have always been here, the value, and we start to value them, we start to value that heritage, whether you're Taino or not, because it was passed on to the enslaved Africans. We were enslaved together, and the purpose was our survival, and we've survived and forgotten that part of our history. We forgot those who showed us the medicine. We forgot those who showed us how to plant on this land. We've forgotten those who fed us and took care of us. And the traditional teaching that I shared with you is that because life is cyclical and is a circle, they said that the healing can only take place when the circle is closed. And those who were here first, the circle returns to them finally in the end, and the healing can begin.
Mm-hmm.
So in our teachings, acknowledging the Taino people is a step, as simple as it may sound, but it's a step forward in healing the trauma of this land, the resistance of this land, healing the people of this land, wherever it is that they may come from, and in so honoring first people that we can truly step forward into healing. We would then acknowledge what has been here the longest and what are the priorities to preserve, protect, and maintain.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely agree and definitely resonate with all that you said, because healing is a big part of it in order to be able to move forward and to cherish what has and what will be moving forward. So how do you envision the future of the Jamaican Taino community and their cultural legacy?
I envision a Jamaica that is resilient as the cassava, as we call it, yuca. One of our spirits is yucahu, which is the spirit of the cassava. This crop is resilient to hurricanes because it is a tuber.
Right.
It's resilient to floods because it is a tuber. It is resilient to strong winds because it is a tuber. And it can last, the food made from it can last, the cassava bread, for up to 3 or 4 years. It's filled with a lot of nutrients, vitamins, and minerals. And living on a land that has that legacy and has continued for so long, our main staple is rice,
mm-hmm.
which is not grown here. So the vision is for Jamaica to take up the work that Chief Dennis is doing, my wife, Chief Dennis Ronaldo, to have several ancestral gardens, you know, with our heirloom corn or heirloom cassava. A return to the awareness of the medicinal uses of tobacco for parasites, for wounds, a respecting of our traditional healers, for there to be an established complementary alternative medicine section with the Ministry of Health here in Jamaica, for there to be a representative in government that is dealing with indigenous rights and indigenous people's rights, so that we have a voice when it comes to any extractive industries around our waters or around our lands, that our sacred sites are preserved and protected, that once that happens, there will be an influx of what they call spiritual and indigenous tourism, because other relatives on other islands that don't have the things that we have, like our Atabe, Semi, and Petroglyph, can come to Woodside and pay respects there as their ancestors would have done, can learn some of the things that we have preserved, and we can learn things from our relatives as well. We can trade and receive some heirloom seeds and crops that we may have lost during the colonization process, that we can honor and preserve and promote the expansion of the spaces of our iguana, so that we can have that reforestation taking place, that there can be education on Taino cosmology, Taino medicinal practice and worldviews, that is taught as a curriculum at the University of the West Indies. You know, probably this is the future result from this indigenous studies cluster, so that we can create cultural value, so that young ones in our community do not view the role of elder, council member, or cacique, or chieftainess, as duty or burden, but something to aspire towards that is able to maintain their family and their livelihood. That there will be a network of individuals throughout the diaspora supporting these activities, that there will be this resurgence of our language. Probably it will start off ceremonial and it will grow to something now that is anchored in our communities, because in the language is a lot of our cosmology and our worldview. There are things that are hard to express in English about our respect for the land and our connection to the land. That there will be young leaders leading the charge in preserving and promoting sustainable ways of living and passing that through digital technology out there to the rest of the globe and the world at large, that we will have these archives of our stories, because stories are medicine as well. Understanding where we came from, where these birds came from, and helping us to stay in alignment and knowing what are the good morals to hold on to and the values to uphold. I see a future where there is cultural sensitivity, where we will be able to walk hand in hand and understand the issues that each other has struggled through and work on it together, where we'll understand that this is one planet that we're sharing. And if there's an issue on one side, it affects all of us, so that we'll be able to collaborate on things that are utmost important, and that the indigenous principle of working for the next seven generations, the next 200 years, is at the core of the decision-making process. That's the future I envision.
No, thank you so much for that, Kalan, because that's a great vision and something that, you know, hopefully can be worked towards. And finally, as we close, what are some current call to action that you have of the Jamaica Taino, or is there anything else that you'd like to bring to the attention to our listeners today?
To our listeners, I would say that there are a lot of activities that are being started, that have been initiated. I would say for the individuals listening that are curious, to start with your family. Start with asking questions. If you need help, you can look online for, you know, good bio questions. Start recording information from your parents and from your grandparents while you can. Some of it may not make sense now, but it will make sense later. Understand their stories. Understand what the world was like through their eyes. Yes, what has been recorded by others has value, but start at home. Okay? Check while you can. How did your parents meet? How did your grandparents meet? What era were they growing in? What is some of the folklore or the stories that they heard growing up? What were some of the practices that were done at home? You would be surprised, because with the information available now, you're able to place where some of these things are coming from. What is the nature? What is the root of it? You know, there's some simple things. You hear in your family that you have Indian tracing back before 1834. Well, the Indian indenture came to Jamaica in 1834. So if you have Indian in the family before then who are they? Right? Start there. DNA comes later. So start at home with the family. That's one. And the stories and asking the right questions, you get the right answers. You know, what folklore you have in your family, what folklore or stories you have about dreams, you know, what are some interesting things that happened while they were growing up, some stories, what were their relations to storms and natural disasters and events. A solar eclipse took place recently. What is your family's tradition regarding solar eclipse? What's your family tradition regarding lunar eclipse? What's the family tradition regarding full moon and new moon? Document this for yourself, for the future generation. So that's one. And then two, reach out to our community. There are activities that we're doing, support, if you can, when you can. Messages like this that are amplifying our voices. Like, subscribe, share. You know, it is important. This is how we get the messages out and are able to reach those who may be going through some issues, who may be going through imposter syndrome, and they need that support. They need to hear from someone who looks like them, that that great grandmother was not crazy, and that, you know, we may have a record of that family line in our list of enrolled family members, that they are not alone, that there is community, and we're here and we'll do our best to try and support.
No, thank you so much. Thank you, Kalan. I really do appreciate your time for coming on to the podcast and to speak about the Jamaican Taino community and to be able to expand that discussion. So thank you so much.
My pleasure.
Hope you enjoyed this episode, and if you did, please make sure to like, follow, subscribe, and write a review for the episode wherever you listen to your podcast. Thank you.